Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Pope Benedict's message for the 40th World Day of Prayer for Vocations. One Vocations director gives us the inside story in his diocese. Offering helpful hints from seminary life. And our popular Latin lover focuses on building walls, not fences. Well, thanks very much for joining me once again. God has always chosen some individuals to work with him in a more direct way in order to accomplish his plan of salvation, writes Pope Benedict in his message for the 40th World Day of Prayer for Vocations, which falls this Sunday, pointing out how the first Christian community was built in its original core when some fishermen from Galilee, having met Jesus, let themselves be conquered by his gaze and his voice and accepted his pressing invitation to follow him and become fishers of men. Drawing attention to the theme of this year's message, which is the vocation to the service of the Church as communion, the Pope comments it is more topical than ever. Thanks to the work of the Holy Spirit, he stresses, all the members of the Church form one body and one spirit in Christ. This people, organically structured under the guidance of pastors, lives the mystery of communion with God and with the brethren, especially when it gathers for the Eucharist. The Eucharist is the source of that ecclesial unity for which Jesus prayed on the eve of his passion, Benedict stresses, quoting from John chapter 17. Father, that they also may be one in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. This intense communion, the Pope explains, favours the growth of generous vocations at the service of the Church. The heart of the believer, filled with divine love, is moved to dedicate itself wholly to the cause of the kingdom. That's why he highlights, in order to foster vocations, it is important that pastoral activity be attentive to the mystery of the Church as communion, because whoever lives in an ecclesial community that is harmonious, co-responsible and conscientious, certainly learns more easily to discern the call of the Lord. The care of vocations therefore demands a constant education for listening to the voice of God. At the centre of every Christian community is the Eucharist, the source and summit of the life of the Church, Pope Benedict points out, affirming how Eucharistic love motivates and founds the vocational activity of the whole Church. And quoting from his encyclical Deus Caritas Est, or God is Love, he explains how this ensues from the fact that vocations to the priesthood and to other ministries and services flourish within the people of God wherever there are those in whom Christ can be seen through his word, in the sacraments and especially in the Eucharist. And now let's listen to a reflection by one priest who looks back at his times in the seminary. He's Monsignor Peter Fleetwood.
In the seminary where I spent 7 years as a student in the 1970s, we had a tradition that has helped me very much over the years since I left. Every Friday evening at 7 o'clock, we had what was called a spiritual conference. At first I was mystified, because the word conference spoke of exchanging views, or at least of some kind of conversation. But in seminaries, the idea was that the spiritual director would speak to the community at least once a week. He chose his own theme, which would vary enormously from week to week. In my time there, we had an American Jesuit priest who had a varied and unpredictable approach, and later a man from my own city who was much more methodical. From time to time, we would have an outsider, perhaps a visitor passing through Rome, or a well-known speaker from the city, maybe a sister or a religious priest. All in all, we had some really inspiring Friday conferences. There were other days when they were less good, but luckily I've forgotten them. Father John was very organised. He was also keen on understanding the liturgy, particularly the way we celebrate Mass. So he often took a theme to do with the Mass. One summer term he went on and on about the part of St. John's Gospel where Jesus talks about being the bread of life. It dawned on me later at home that summer that those were the Gospel texts we would be hearing during our ridiculously long college holidays. It was the summer when I was sent as a deacon to what is probably the most beautiful church building we have in my home city. And his reflections helped me to help the people listening to my first attempts at preaching to get something out of the Gospel readings. Quite a few of Father John's Friday conferences were on the readings. Some were about spiritual writers. He often spoke about the feelings we would experience as priests, the joys and the disappointments that would come our way. It was his opportunity to help the whole college community focus on our lives as priests, once we had left and were trying to get on with the job back in our dioceses. But there was another kind of topic that Father John chose, which has helped me help others to get more out of the celebration of the Mass. If you have ever been in the company of Catholic teenagers from Western Europe or North America, you will have heard them say how boring the Mass is. I have often asked what they mean. They nearly all say, it never changes, we do the same things every time, so why bother going? They often talk about boring homilies too, and I have to confess, I've inflicted a few of those on people from time to time in the last quarter of a century. But I'm fascinated by their chief complaint, that things never change. They are not old enough to realise that routine is essential, that life is chaotic without some regular patterns. A priest who just does what is written in the book will never spring unwelcome surprises on people who have simply come to have their spiritual batteries recharged and to be inspired for the week ahead. One part of the Mass that Father John asked us to use more carefully was the Holy Holy at the end of the preface, the opening section of the Eucharistic prayer. It really is worth letting it speak to you afresh. Heaven and earth are full of your glory. We say it at every Mass, but do we mean it? If we don't, we really shouldn't say it. But if we do mean it, it means we have a very unusual take on the world around us. Even in a church full of crying babies, we can say the world is full of God's glory. Even when our best friend has just lost his job, we see him saying those words and meaning them. Another friend's hair fell out because of the treatment she's been having for cancer, and yet there she is, meaning those words more than we do. When you think about it, if you find yourself asking what life is all about, go back to those words the next time you're at Mass, and don't let them be routine. It's my guess that they may convince you that everything has its place in this world that can often be so mysterious, that whatever may happen, there is a point.
Thanks, Ergo, to Monsignor Peter Fleetwood for these helpful suggestions. But now I'd like to hear more about the practical side of things by turning to someone whose job description is to be vocations director. In a mostly rural area of England with city centres such as Derby, Leicester and Nottingham. In fact, his diocese is precisely Nottingham, an area often described as being geographically as large as Belgium. His name is Father David Kane, a young man. So although in polite circles you certainly don't ask people how old they are, I felt this time I needed a little bit of an explanation and came up with a suggestion as to why he'd been picked to be vocations director given his young age. So you've been ordained for 4 years,
yep,
is that right?
Yep, I have.
And you're vocations director.
Yes.
Is there a reason for that? Is it because your superiors think you're young enough to be able to communicate to other young people your vocation, or?
I would guess that's the case. I've been involved in vocations promotion since my first year at seminary, which is coming up to sort of 10 years ago, really. I got involved in that with a priest called Father Mark Crisp, who's now the rector of the Oscott College in Birmingham. And he asked me to come into a school with him in a primary school because I was free one morning. And I went in to talk about my vocation, what I was called, what I felt I was called to priesthood, and what do you do, how do you train as a priest, and what happens when you are a priest. And chatted to the kids about that and discovered that I actually loved doing it.
So you're a fisher of men?
A fisher of men. Well, Jesus does that, you see, and I'm one of his agents. I like doing it. I think it's something that I never really get bored of. It can be very difficult explaining why you do what you do, and it is very hard to put it into words. Because for most people, you think, well, if you have a vocation, did a big fiery angel appear at the bottom of your bed one night and say, well, Dave, I want you to be a priest in a big deep voice? And you think, well, that's very clear if a fiery angel had said that to me, but it doesn't work like that. It's a more gnawing away at you, and you know all the way through, since my early teens, I knew I was being called to be a priest, but I didn't have the courage to answer the call. It was only when I left university, I did a postgraduate course in law. I was thinking about being a barrister at that stage, and I reached an important junction in my life, and I thought, this is the time, I needed the gift of the Holy Spirit of courage. I got it, and so I picked up a telephone and phoned a priest and said, what do I do now?
Vocations have dropped considerably in the last 20 years or so, perhaps more, no?
In England, over the last 4 years, they've actually been increasing. We wondered, as a group of vocations directors, whether it's just that we as Catholics as a whole are getting more confident about our own religion. I think the life and the death as well of John Paul II showed how do we communicate our faith to other people. And I think people are much more willing to do that. And people are more willing to accept vocations as a consequence of that. Mm. Even in universities, for example, where perhaps in the past people over the last decade have been reluctant to talk about the church because it has encountered various difficulties and challenges. But now people think, no, faith has given me something and I feel confident to tell others about it. And because of that, maybe a culture of vocation is starting to grow, where people are not just interested in money or fame or power, but they actually want to be at the service of the church.
The vocation to the service of the Church's communion is the message which Pope Benedict has chosen for this year's World Day of Prayer for Vocations. He claims it's more topical than ever. Would you agree?
Well, actually, it doesn't sound as if it would be topical, but I think he's tapping into something very important, because he's tapping into that confidence. He's saying, well, why are people being called? And what he's sort of suggesting is that it is at the service of communion. So that visibly, people who have vocations, by answering a calling to a very challenging life but a very rewarding life, show to other people, well, yeah, we're in a sense, sort of people that are walking down those paths. And if you show, like I hope I do, I love my vocation, I enjoy doing what I do, and other people might think, well, yeah, well, why does he enjoy it? And ask the questions, why? And if we're at the service of the communion of the church, of drawing the church as a community, both visibly on earth but also heavenly communion, then that's a great thing. And it's hopefully just making people think, why do these people do these things? And can I follow?
Now, the Pope also says that the Eucharist is at the centre of every Christian community. When you find vocations, is it true that your average Catholic who goes to Mass and takes part in the Eucharist, or does it come from elsewhere?
Yes, I would say that the vocations, in my experience, are people who recognise the importance of the Eucharist, that will be people who, you know, they may not, because of work commitments, be daily communicants, but they will certainly be involved in their parish communities. And they're not making some major leap, so a parish priest won't suddenly say, well, who is this person that has appeared in my congregation is saying I want to be a priest. They'll usually be people who are very well known to a parish priest or a parish sister, or be involved in a particular aspect of catechetics. And because of that, they recognise the importance of Holy Communion in their lives, that, again, it gives them the confidence to come forward.
You speak about courage all the time. Do you think it's because in England Catholics are a minority?
Do you think there's something in that?
A bit of both, yeah. I think there is something in that. I think, you know, the way that the church appears in the media is very important. And I think there are a number of bishops in England have taken major steps and have taken risks, really, in speaking to the media. Because whenever you appear on TV or radio or you do a newspaper article, it's a risk that you're going to be misrepresented. And we can sort of take a back seat and we can say, well, you know, I don't want to take that risk. I don't want the difficulties that might occur because of that. And I think it's great that they are doing that, coming forward with confidence and talking about the church. And sometimes it can be very difficult.
Particularly in England, in the media, they tend to portray the negative side of things, don't they?
They do, yeah, they do. And I think the lead-up, you know, the last few days of John Paul II's life and his death and what happened after, I think that was actually a huge moment where people were willing to come out and talk about his life. And to say, well, why was he such a huge figure for the church? And what happens next? And the interest, it was fascinating, from all sorts of secular media outlets, whether it be TV and radio, and they just couldn't get enough of the story. When you talk about the story, well, what was it that gave this old failing man such strength? And I know people beforehand were calling for his retirement, but that witness, right until the end...
So witness is important.
Huge.
Witness is very important.
Very important.
In your
opinion. It's the key. It is the key, really.
You mentioned that you had four students in Rome and in England?
Yes, we've got one chap that's studying at Oscott College in Birmingham. Mm. And, he's third year at the moment. So he's halfway through there and starting to receive some of the minor orders and the ministries as he moves on. But, he's a younger chap, actually, at Oscott. He's only in his early 20s and has come from, actually, a background of working in computers and is very familiar with media and, again, is a very confident chap called Aaron. And, it's great. It's good to see the people. And the candidates we've got this year are excellent. You know, all sorts of backgrounds. We've got we're going to interview who's a DJ, one that's come from a background of teaching and all sorts of other different and interesting backgrounds. But it's good. It's interesting for us as well to say, well, why? Why are these people coming forward? And why do they choose a particular time in their lives?
Our thanks there to Father David Kane, Vocations Director for the Nottingham Diocese. Meanwhile, time to go north of Nottingham, but watch the total change of pace and tone as we're about to join our popular Latin lover. He's Father Reginald Foster. Stay tuned.
I'm going to read you something from Robert Frost, because I'm going to speak about walls today.
Walls?
Yes, walls. Special walls. Robert Frost said in a poem, "Something there is that doesn't love a wall. Good fences make good neighbours." How do you translate that into Latin?
"Aliquid est quod muros non diligat." And then what's the next word follows?
"Good fences."
"Sapimenta bona."
"Make good neighbours."
"Bonos efficiunt proximos."
So anyway, the Romans liked building walls, didn't they?
Mm.
And they built a wall in England, Hadrian.
Hadrian across there, yes.
The Emperor Hadrian, between Newcastle and Carlisle.
I've never seen it.
How did the Romans get that far in those days?
What do you mean, get that far? Geographically or technically?
Yeah, geographically.
Well, they just pushed with their armies. They just took over the whole world. That was the end of it.
Their armies were called legions, right?
Mm.
In Latin, legiones.
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 Yes. The only way, I think I mentioned the other day, they didn't get into Germany. Because every time they tried, the Germans would whip them.
In fact, they lost three legions. And three legions also built Hadrian's Wall. So why did they use legionaries to build walls?
Well, that was like their supplementary duties, you see. In fact, Julius Caesar mentions this. During the day, they would fight. And during the night, they would build. Ooh.
How'd you say that in Latin?
Ergo. Diu pugnabant.
Edifica, diu.
Diu during the day, pugnabant. Edificabant noctu. Look at how much you can say in four Latin words. Diu pugnabant. Edificabant noctu. Oh, is that glorious?
So we know how you say wall now in Latin.
Well, that's one word. A murus is an external wall. Internal wall is another word. Paries. Parietes is which the Italians have. Parete.
I haven't seen the wall either, but it's 45 miles in stone and the remaining 35 in turf.
Hmm.
That's what I read, but it probably wasn't just stone, was it?
Well, what they built, like, they built like a rampart, you know, of ground and...
How do you say build a wall?
Well, murum excitare, edificare.
I'm always reading Latin. Does anyone speak about this wall of Hadrian?
Yes, Augusta speaks about this.
What did he say about it?
Oh, I mean, in general terms. Fact is, you won't believe that some of the biggest things, the Colosseum in Rome, is mentioned in Latin literature in four words. That's all.
So
we shouldn't be surprised at such glorious things.
And what are the four words?
Amphitheatrum medio urbe fecit. He made an amphitheatre in the middle of the city. That's all that's said about the Colosseum, got it? Well, the fact is, up there, I would have to check the text. But it's one of these things, you know, he had a wall built and so forth, and they would go on to something else. Because they didn't consider this as very important.
By the wall, there was a ditch, right? How do you say ditch?
Well, that was the fossa. Fossa.
Fossa.
And so you have to go the wall and then up and then down. Well, in the end, you never got into the camp, more or less. Because it was like humanly impossible.
I don't know why, but in English there's a saying, which has nothing to do with a wall, with Hadrian's wall, or anything to do with building anyway. They say that you get into an emotional ditch.
Well, like a rut.
Yeah, how do you say that? An emotional ditch?
Actually, that's a little, they wouldn't use fossa. Fovea, they would use maybe a fovea is... like a rut, a fovea is a little different.
And emotional?
Well, you'd say animi. Fovea, animi.
They didn't talk much about emotions.
You see, that's, I mentioned before, so often on this program and so forth, some of the concepts are hard to, render. Emotional disturbances. The Romans didn't understand emotional disturbances. They would understand disturbances of the spirit, something in general like that.
So they didn't have shrinks. They just built walls instead.
Shrinks. Happily, they didn't have shrinks.
How would you say shrink?
They would say, okay, animi. What are you going to say? Animi medicus or curator. And so they would say, like, animi angores. Disturbances of the spirit. And leave out the psychological talk today.
They were too busy.
Well, they were, the Romans were very concrete, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And Latin is concrete, and the Colosseum is concrete. And they didn't understand abstractions at all. Like, that's why the Romans and the Greeks never understood each other. Because the Greeks with Aristotle were talking about metaphysics and stuff. The Romans of metaphysics would say, oh, what are you talking about?
They just hung in there.
Well, yeah, they were with their,
How'd you say hung in there?
Okay, per se verabant. Okay, per se verabant. Something like that. They had their own thing, and their girlfriends and wine and nature and the state and the family and children. Real concrete things. No, which is very good. I think we should go back to Rome.
How'd you say that in Latin?
Rediundum nobis Romam est.
A big thank you once again to Carmelite Father Reginald Foster, the Pope's own Latinist, for sharing with us his expertise and entertaining us as he goes along. Finally, this Eastertide, I'd like to end on a reflective note with well-known author and theologian, Jesuit Father Gerald O'Collins.
Here in Rome and in other large cities, dear friends, I like looking at the ads for various products that you see at the railway stations or down in the underground system. That publicity regularly promises to improve life. Spend your money on this product and you'll have a much more vital existence. One brand of cheese offers to help its buyers live in good form and live better. A huge ad for milk that I saw guarantees to help all milk drinkers towards a better life. A brand of bitter liqueur, Amaro, makes a joke about its name to assure prospective drinkers that it will make life less bitter. An unsweetened Riesling wine holds out simply the pleasures of life. To encourage more people to take part in the New Year's marathon, the city administration of Rome once put out huge banners urging the citizens to live sport. A political party recently promoted a national meeting with the call, "Let's Embrace Life." All that publicity for food, drink, sport and political engagement promises customers a richer, more satisfying life. Whatever the value of the particular goods being promoted, the messages converge on one magic word, life. All these ads send me back to Jesus and his astonishing way of presenting himself in chapter 11 of John's Gospel. I am the resurrection and the life. His friend Lazarus has fallen ill and died. With a brother dead and now buried for 4 days, Martha meets Jesus and reproaches him for Lazarus's death. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. At the same time, she expresses her faith in the future that God will bring. I know that my brother will rise again at the resurrection on the last day. Jesus says nothing to challenge that hope, but he draws her attention to its basis. Here and now, Jesus proves himself to be life in person. Now, right from its start, the Gospel of John announces Jesus to be the one in whom there is life. He promises to give life and to give it in abundance. On the night before he dies, he calls himself the way, the truth, and the life. In Jesus, Mary, Lazarus, and countless others meet someone who is uniquely life-giving. To experience him is to experience the very bread of life. By rising from the dead, he becomes, for men and women of all times and all places, the source of an amazingly new and supremely worthwhile existence. Life, I know, is a magic word. It's something everyone hungers for. We yearn for the fullness of life, both here and hereafter. But real life, lasting life, is not there for the taking or the making, as many advertisements tell us. Publicity so often works on the principle, here's life, help yourself. We don't truly live by buying things or seizing things for ourselves. We truly live, and will always truly live, by opening ourselves to Jesus, who is life in person. In Jesus crucified and risen from the dead, we'll find the better life. By embracing him, or rather by letting him embrace us, we will receive forever total life in satisfying abundance.
Our thanks there to well-known author and theologian, Jesuit Father Gerald O'Collins. And that brings me up to time. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for listening. If you should wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now, and remember, we'll be back again at this same time tomorrow, so be sure to tune in then.
Laudator Jesus Christus.